Welcome to episode 6 of the Coquitlam Express Inside Track Podcast. I'm Eddie Gregory, the play-by-play broadcaster of the Coquitlam Express, along with the Director of Communications for the Express, Jacob Lazar. And we're sitting here at the Poirier Sports and Leisure Complex, just hours away of what we've been waiting for not just this week, but for the last few months. Game 1 of the Express first-round series against the Langley Rivermen in the best-of-7 Mainland Division semifinal as the Express go into the postseason with 47 wins on the season, best record in the BCHL, Mainland Division champions, and coming off a pair of victories against Prince George last week at up north to wrap up the regular season. But honestly, Jacob, we've been talking about this day coming up for a long, long time, and we're finally happy that it's here.
We sure have, and it's tough when you're heading down the stretch and you want to be playing good hockey, you want to be playing good competitive hockey, but there's always that little itch for the playoffs and knowing things are going to be so much different when that season rolls over.
And that's just it. I mean, once you and I start to realize that this Express team was having not just a good start, but at the end of the day, a really, really good year, you start to change your focus and think about how does this team really measure up against the elite in the BCHL? How does this team really measure up against games that really start to matter? And we slowly start to get those answers over the course of the season. And, going into the series, I like the way the Express finished the year going 8-1-1 in their last 10 games and, playing some of their better hockey going down the stretch into the postseason here.
Yeah, and I think you look at some key players as well. They're getting hot at the right time. Jack Watson's been really good recently. And obviously, Jason Forche has talked about this numerous times. He came off surgery in the summer. He missed his training camp. He missed the start of the season. It took him a while to get used to this league coming from the OJHL, and there is a little bit of an adjustment. And he started to settle in, and this is the perfect time for him to get settled in, obviously, as we all know Clay Stevenson not eligible for the playoffs. So Jack Watson looks sharp in between the pipes, and Joe Howes looked fine in his appearances as well. So that's starting to answer some of the question marks there. But you look at guys like Nick Carabin. He's been fantastic in probably his last 15 to 20 games or so. Drew Cooper's been steady all year. Now you're getting guys coming back from injury. Tattle and O'Rourke both stepped in, played games up in Prince George, and both of them looked effective. Tattle's got his speed and his tenacity. He was finishing checks. O'Rourke, we obviously saw a pot of power play goal, and he scored a shootout winner as well. So, the hands are back for O'Rourke. The speed is back for Tattle, which coming off of those guys' injuries might have been a question mark. So that's really good to see that these are getting answered heading into playoffs.
And for me as well, there was never really a threat of losing it, but the speed is also there with Ethan O'Rourke.
Yeah.
And that is such a vital element to his game. And
it's sneaky speed, too.
It is. And I look at, he had a hand, I can't remember, I don't think he got an assist on it, but he definitely had a hand on the Noah Deladuante goal in Prince George. I believe it was on the Saturday game, but Ethan just basically picked up the puck at the Express blue line and just wheeled through the neutral zone and used his speed to gain entry and just muscle it into the zone at will and basically allowed the Express to set up a possession in the offensive zone. And then 15, 20 seconds later, the puck squirts out to Noah Deladuante, who pots it into the back of the net. And, I've made such a notable emphasis on keeping an eye on guys trying to handle Ethan O'Rourke's speed, and there's no one, as I've said numerous times in this league, that can touch Ethan O'Rourke when he's wheeling.
Yeah, when you combine the speed with a 6'4", 6'5" frame, he is not easy to push off a puck. He's not easy to defend. So it's going to be a huge addition to this Express lineup having him back, and he's played very well against the Langley Rivermen this year too, which is going to be important for a best-of-7 series.
And you mentioned Ryan Tattle as well, and he came back after missing pretty much 4 months with, basically a broken leg and some ligament damage and everything like that from a hit suffered in a game against Langley, unintentional by any means by Langley at that time. But, he was just shot out of a cannon, and he had so much energy that was pent up, and it was fun to watch him just unleash all that energy in his last 3 games back against Surrey and the 2 games up in Prince George. And literally, the Express had to try to rein him back at times because his energy was so on a high level.
Ryan Tattle, and I've known Ryan for a few years, he is just, he is the epitome of a player, with a fire lit under them. He is always burning. He is always flying out there. and he's yapping, and he is the perfect player you want for the playoffs because he's the kind of guy that's just going to annoy the living daylight out of any other team in this league. They're going to have to deal with him flying around the ice. They're going to have to deal with him finishing every check. He's not going to run you over, but he's going to slam you into the boards whenever he has a chance, and he's going to be yapping at you about it afterwards. And that is so perfect for this Express team heading into the playoffs.
And you did touch on it briefly prior to there as well about Jack Watson's play, and obviously the spotlight, you know, got brighter on him once the news basically came out that Clay Stevenson was ineligible for the postseason, and I was watching him very, very closely, especially in the last 2 months of the regular season, and, you know, like you say, he's really starting to find his game and really starting to settle into his game. And what I've liked from Jack Watson a lot lately is, you know, he's being square to the shooters, he's not allowing pucks to get away from him, and he's been really, really good in tight in the goal crease area over the course of the last number of games or so. And, you know, that's an area where teams find ways to score goals, is in the dirty areas in tight. And, you know, I've made note of it many times that Clay Stevenson was so good at it throughout the course of the year, but I've noticed that from Jack Watson the last number of weeks as well.
Yeah, I think a big part of it for him is confidence, and obviously we've discussed in the past the deal with his catching glove, and now he's settled into his new one, and that mental hurdle seems to be gone. He's catching pucks again in tight. Yeah, he's staying square. He's staying positional. He's not oversliding his post. He's not sliding flat as well. He's making sure to get to his post, keeping his angles tight, and not giving up those little bits of space that BCHL shooters are going to be able to tuck in from 5 feet out. And when I look at Jack Watson, I think, okay, he is playing at a level where this Express team can feel just as confident playing in front of him as they were with Clay Stevenson. They know that if they make a mistake, he's going to be there to bail them out more times than not. And that makes a huge difference for a team and how you're playing, especially when you're dealing with a series and every goal can be catastrophic in the long run. Having that little bit of comfort inside, knowing that your goaltender can be there to bail you out, is huge. It's important.
One of the areas that is vital to any team to have success come the postseason, and it plays a role in what you mentioned there in finding ways to keep pucks out of the net, and that's penalty killing.
Yep.
And the Express finished with the best penalty killing mark in the BCHL, up around 89% on the season. I forget exactly what the number was.
89.5, I believe.
Sounds about right. But the Express had a very, very strong finish to the regular season on the penalty kill. And, you know, when this team has been at their best under Jason Forte, that's really been one of the areas that's been going.
It has. And I know you and I were texting the other day. We were looking, trying to see where it ranks all time. Obviously, with the way that the special team stats are on the BCHL website, there's a drop-off after, I believe, or before 2013.
Yeah.
Just dealing with moving of data over from server to server. And I legitimately believe this is probably a top three penalty kill in the history of this league.
Yeah.
And, you know, we looked, it's better than the 2011-2012 Penticton Vs, and that's a team that, you know, is historic in this league for how good they were. And this Express team kills penalties better than that team did.
One of the things that I was hoping to maybe use as a tool to try and find some information a little longer down history road, basically, was try and use an internet archiver to go through some old websites and try and find an archive of the BCHL website from 10 years ago and try and take a look at the 2009, 2010-ish, 2011-ish, in and around those years, the Vernon Vipers.
Yeah, we saw a few good teams in the league around then.
The Penticton Vs and the Powell River Kings, and unfortunately, I could not find that information online, and I was able to get to the BCHL website, but when I did get to the special team statistics and try and switch it to a specific year, unfortunately, that information would not come up, so that's one thing that is a little bit unfortunate, but you know, you go into a series like this against Langley, where the Express were 6-2 against the Rivermen over the course of the year, and the two losses that the Express suffered were in Langley early in the season, and it was such a unique season series between the two teams, with basically six games between the two clubs from opening night in Langley on September 7th right on through until basically the end of October, where the Express played six out of their first 17-some-odd games against Langley, and then just two games against Langley towards the end of the season in the month of January here in this building. So it is a little hard to use the full scale, you know, window of what we saw head to head going into this series. But from an Express point of view, anyways, obviously they had two very good outings against Langley in the two meetings here in January.
And also when you look at that, Jack Watson and Joe Howe never played against the Langley Rivermen. Clay Stevenson played in six of the games, and Thomas Wardle played in the other two, now of the Powell River Kings. So it's very difficult to look at this and say, oh, how do these teams match up? Because both teams are going to be quite different coming into this playoff series. Obviously, some changes in net for the Langley Rivermen. And are we going to see Fleming? Or are we going to see Moore? There's worries that Brendan Booty might be out for the Rivermen. He's dealt with injuries late in the season. So it's going to be one where I almost think you can just toss the season series out. It was so peculiar in the way that it was set up. If you want to look at those January games, obviously those would favor the Express. It was an 8-1 win and a 5-0 win in this building over the Langley Rivermen. But you know that team is going to try and find their rhythm here in the playoffs. They didn't have a good stretch run, but they had a few good games. They dominated Prince George in the second game up in Kitimat and ended up winning in extra time. But I believe they outshot them by almost 30 shots in that game. They were all over the Spruce Kings. So you know that the effort is there, and the Langley Rivermen are not an opponent that can be taken lightly. There's no opponent you can take lightly in this league.
And Langley did have a few games in their last 10 where they did get 40, almost 50-plus shots in a game over the course of that time, whether it be the game in Kitimat against Prince George, as you mentioned, but they also had back-to-back high-shot total games on the island against the Victoria Grizzlies and the Cowichan Valley Capitals. So they've been able to find ways to put pucks on the net, but getting back to the games against Langley head-to-head, and Ethan O'Rourke brought this up, and it's obviously going to be a key factor, and Jason Forte brought it up when we chatted as well this week about, discipline's going to be such a key element to this series. And we know the emotions are always going to be high when these two teams get head-to-head. And, Bobby Henderson's teams are known for being physical. They're known to being get in your face and trying to get you frustrated and get you off your game that way. And the Express are certainly aware of that. They definitely have the bodies that are certainly capable of it. But, what we saw in that 8-1 game against Langley in January was when Langley got unglued, when they tried to be silly, for lack of a better term, the Express embraced it, they took the hits, and they made it count on the power play, and they ran them up on the scoreboard that way with 5 power play goals in that 8-1 win. And that's certainly something that the teams can be focusing on going into this series. The second game in January against Langley was a little bit different because, again, it was a penalty-filled affair. But the teams went a combined 0-for-17 on the power play.
I find it so weird. The Express power play, it's looked its very best in the year against Langley. And, there was the 4-goal outbreak early in the season, obviously the game you just mentioned. But it's also looked near its worst against Langley. And that combined 0-for-17 game, have you ever seen that before where teams combined to go 0-for-17 on power play?
I've seen that, and a lot of that game was a lot of power plays coming to an abrupt end because
with
the other
extra penalties, a lot of 4-on-4 mixed in. That game had a little bit of it, but for the most part, teams just rolled out their power play unit for nearly 2 minutes and couldn't find the back of the net. So, obviously, in the playoffs, the convention goes that there's going to be fewer penalties, it's going to be called a little bit looser, and you're going to have fewer opportunities to capitalize on the man advantage. So what power play are we going to get from the Express? Are we going to get their 5-goal outbreak against Langley, or are we going to get their 0-for against Langley? And I think, I don't want to say it's going to decide the series, but it could very well determine if this series is going to end in 4 or 5 games, or if it's going to go 6 or 7 and give the Langley Rivermen a chance to pull off an upset.
I want to lean towards, it'll creep towards somewhere in the middle, and I was looking at the Express power play statistics, basically dating back to either when they came back after the Christmas break or around January 1st. I just wanted to see a longer-term view of what the Express power play had done. And the Express finished second in the BCHL on the power play, just a shade under 25%. And I was looking at those long-term numbers over the course of about a 2-month window, and pretty much the power play was bang on at 25% in and around that time. So that's kind of what I'm leaning towards in terms of if the Express power play is having success in this series, it'll probably just, like they say, regress towards the mean from an Express point of view anyways.
Yeah, I feel like if you were to isolate any 5-10 game stretch of the Express season, the power play is probably at 25%. Mm-hmm. And you might have 1 or 2 games where they go 0-for, and then a couple games where they go 2-for-4 or 2-for-5, and it ends up right around 25% in the end. So I think in this series and throughout the whole playoffs, you can probably expect, if you're gonna give the Express 4 power plays in a game, you better be fully aware that they're scoring a goal on one of them. So we'll see, but I do think it's going to be important to watch. And then obviously the Rivermen, are they going to be able to generate enough offense on their power play to break down the league's best PK?
And that's kind of where I start to see where the teams start to separate one another in terms of its collective depth.
Yep.
And I think when the Express are healthy, there's very few teams in this league, I think, that can match their depth. I mean, we've talked numerous times throughout the course of the year. Individually, there aren't a lot of guys with great, great numbers. I mean, Greg LaPointe was the leading scorer for the team, you know, right at 60 points and just a shade under 30 goals and everything like that. But, you know, collectively, there were a lot of guys in and around 30, 40, you know, a few guys getting into 50 points. And from 1 through 12 up front and 1 through 6 on the back end, does Langley have enough depth to match all the areas where the Express can really be effective if they're on their game? Because the Express also got Noah Deladuante and Stephen Bellini back, which play such a vital role in terms of helping drive the offense on the back end for this team.
Yeah, I don't know if I think you're right. I don't know if there's any team that can really match up when the Express are on and playing their game. When we were, you know, I was on the bus coming back from Prince George with the team, and you know, Coach Fortier was kind of going through, you know, asking the staff, you know, just mock up a playoff lineup. Let's you know, just do a little brainstorm. And he let me mock one up too. And, you know, Ross, as the AT, we all got in on the fun, right? Just a little exercise. And we all ended up with very similar-looking lineups. But we realized how easy it is to move guys almost anywhere throughout the lineup and really make sense of them in that spot, just depending on who they are with line combinations and pairs. And that comes from the fact that you have guys that are very good in specific roles, but can also chip in other ways, right? You have guys like Adam Trotman, who has really, you know, started to get going now offensively, but he's still going to be a good face-off guy, and he's going to be able to play some good shutdown hockey, being physical against some smaller centers. And so you can slot him almost anywhere in your lineup, and then you can look at wingers that could play with him, or you could move Trotman to the wing. You know, you have a depth at center with guys like Rizzo, O'Rourke, Trotman, Connell. You can move guys to the wing. It's a very difficult process for a coaching staff trying to figure that kind of stuff out. But what it means and what it gives the Express is the opportunity to create lines, especially when you're at home with last change, that can be tailored directly towards the opposition and give you the absolute best chance of scoring when you have offensive possessions and shutting them down when you have defensive possessions.
And what I like about the Express strength down the middle is its versatility. You have a good combination of skill and size on both sides of the ice, whether it be Massimo Rizzo or Adam Trotman as left-handed centers, and they're both very good in that category, or Cooper Connell and Ethan O'Rourke as right-handed centers. And, you know, that all goes into, you know, we have a bit of an idea of some of the work that is done behind the scenes by Jason Fortier and Sam Waterfield, but they take all that information and they use it to build their ultimate game plan for this series. And you look at that versatility and what they can do in various spots of the ice with what the Express have at center, I think it really helps their cause as well in their preparation.
100%. And you can even throw Tyler Schleppe in there. There's another big body that plays the middle. I think you're right. It's a lot easier to prepare when you have all these different tools in your toolbox. You're not limited to one, you know, one layout or one lineup because you have that versatility. And you know, you mentioned the combination of size and skill from both left-handed and right-handed shots. You have different wingers that pair well with these centers. I really think the way that this team was assembled, and this is, you know, you can say what you want about Jason Fortier, the coach, and we'll get into it in a second, winning coach of the year. But I think Jason Fortier, the GM, did a very good job this year assembling a team that he can coach to its fullest potential because of the way that they're laid out and because of the depth that they've amassed 1 through 12 and 1 through 6.
And what has been interesting to me, and, you know, I mean, you watch how Jason Fortier and Sam Waterfield operate, and you know they have a very, very tight connection, and they have very, very similar personalities.
Which they do. It's quite funny, actually.
It is, but I really think those type of personalities have really, really gelled well together, mm-hmm. that have made this team what it is this year. And you know, Jason does a very good job of delegating to Sam, all right, I need you to cover this, and Sam's like, okay, and I will come back with you later on down the road with a whack load of information and data stored away in this, as you assigned, and then he can basically relay that information as necessary. And you know, knowing what we know in terms of you know, the type of information that Sam Waterfield has stored away. It's a good indication of how Jason and Sam work together.
Yeah, and then, you know, you obviously look, Dara Festinger helps out. She does a bunch of analytics, and Sam takes a lot of those numbers. And, you know, I tag video live during games, and sometimes, you know, Sam and Jason will ask for specific things and looking, and, you know, we're talking about what we're going to do with that for the playoffs as far as what kind of video we want and how they're going to be able to utilize that. And I really think when you look at the way that Jason and Sam coach together, it almost feels like they're, you know, Jason's the big brother and Sam's the little brother because they're so similar, but they, and sometimes they bicker, but it's in a productive way, if that makes any sense. And then you look at the way that they communicate with the players. They're very upfront. You know, they don't toe the line with anyone. They tell them, you know, they're honest and they tell the players how it is, but they also have that ability to just kind of build those personal connections, really create a tight-knit bond between the dressing room, between the coaching staff, between the support staff. You know, everyone really feels like they belong, and I think that's what's going to be probably the biggest differentiator between this Express team and other teams that you have in the playoffs this year. Every team is going to say that they're close, but I don't know how many teams are really as close as this Express team.
And that's just it. I really do believe that is such a vital element for any team that has success. And like you said, you can say you're close, but until you've been around a team that is close and you can sense it and you've experienced it in the past, I don't think you can really make that assessment.
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, we get our fair bit of time on the bus and in the dressing room. And from what we've seen, I can confidently say this team is close. There's no cliques. You know, everybody has respect for everybody else. And when you're playing between the buzzers, everyone's all in for each other. And that comes from the coaching staff down. It comes from the leadership group amongst the players in the room. It's something very special that you don't see all that often.
All right, well, let's get into the news of the week. And basically, the final cap of the regular season for the Express and all the feathers and everything like that was basically capped off this week with the BCHL awards that came out. And obviously the big one that we were kind of hoping for was BCHL MVP. We were pushing for Clay Stevenson, but we knew there was a really good chance that Kent Johnson had a chance to win it. And Johnson did ultimately catch the BCHL MVP award, but no surprise, Clay Stevenson was the BCHL's top goaltender, and his work alongside Jack Watson, Joe Howe, and Thomas Wardle also helped the Express get the top goaltender duo award. I know the latter two don't fall into the category.
They don't qualify.
But I'm lumping them all in together because
sure,
they basically, at the end of the day, they played a role in helping the Express secure the lowest goals against in the BCHL.
Yeah, so the Wally Forslund Trophy, if you're an NHL fan, it's the William Jennings equivalent in the BCHL. So that'll be taken home by Clay Stevenson and Jack Watson this year. Watson made the cut. I believe it's 15 games. Watson played in 17. So yes, unfortunately, Howe and Wardle don't qualify. But they did, like you mentioned, they were a big part in that, especially early in the season for Wardle and then late in the season for Howe. And so that's a huge honor for that. And really, when you look at goals against average, it's a team stat. And the goalies get credit for it because they are that last line of defense. But, you know, if you go talk to Clay or Jack, they'll tell you that wouldn't happen without the team that was playing in front of them. And then Clay Stevenson winning goalie of the year, I think that was a no-brainer. I'll stand by this stat because it's one that I've never personally seen before, and I don't know when I'll see again. But Clay Stevenson played in 35 games this year, and he had more shutouts than he had losses. That should say it all right there. And then finishing second all-time in the BCHL in save percentage and goals against average, how do you pick anyone else?
Yeah, I mean, that's just it. I mean, we're not just going to be talking about Clay Stevenson had a good season. We're going to be looking back in 15, 20 years from now and still see Clay Stevenson's name amongst the top goaltenders all time in BCHL history for what he did this past season. There may be other goaltenders down the road that will eventually surpass some of the marks that Clay Stevenson made this year, but an absolutely well-deserved recognition. And that leads to some of the All-Star Awards that came out as well, with Clay Stevenson, no surprise, being named a first-team All-Star for the Express. And then Greg LaPointe, who was the leading rookie scorer in the BCHL this year. He was on the all-rookie team. He was a second-team All-Star. And someone else got recognized as well that you and I are very, very happy about.
Yep.
In Drew Cooper, the Express captain, being named a second-team All-Star.
When I talk to broadcasters around the league or when I talk to people with the league, all I want to talk about is Drew Cooper, because I think he deserves that recognition. He is just such a solid two-way defenseman. His offense kind of comes in droves a little bit. He scores more when the Express are healthy, because it just means he doesn't have to play 33 minutes a night. But he had a Player of the Week honor. I believe he was the only defenseman to win BCHL Player of the Week this year, and that was just for an amazing offensive week where he picked up 6 points in two games. But his defense, he is so hard to beat one-on-one. You get some of the best, most skilled players in this league going at him one-on-one, and 9 times out of 10, he's knocking the puck off them before they even reach the face-off dots in the offensive zone. He is so solid, so quietly solid. He'll throw some big checks. He'll battle on the boards. He'll move pucks. He does absolutely everything you want out of a top pair defenseman and out of a team captain, and I'm so happy he got the recognition on that All-Star team.
And he's just also so good with his stick as well, just to find ways to disrupt plays.
Yeah.
And yeah. I've been a big Drew Cooper fan. It took me about 5 or 6 games last year. I mean, I didn't know much about him, to be honest with you, when Jason recruited him for going into last year. You know, you knew a bit more about some of the other defensemen coming in, probably due in part because, you know, they had some scholarships in their back pocket, like a Jack Cameron or a Peter Walton for the back end. But once you saw Drew Cooper play after a few games, you really start to understand what he meant to this group. And the one award that really got a lot of attention was Coach of the Year.
Yes.
And Jason Forche got named that. I mean, with all due respect to all the other coaches in the BCHL, there were no other candidates for that award. And, you know, that award is obviously recognition for what Jason Forche has done this year to guide the Express to the best record in the league. But to me, it's a culmination of all the work that he's done since day one that he got here at the end of November 2017.
Yeah, I sent out this tweet. He took the worst team in the BCHL and turned them into the best team in the BCHL in 2.5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And in junior hockey, when you very rarely keep a player for more than 2 years, that is absolutely absurd that he was able to do that. And that should really go, and you look at what some other people who have known Jason for a long time were saying on social media. He does this wherever he goes. Mm-hmm. He shows up, he builds a winning culture, and he wins hockey games. And he came to the BCHL, which, you know, it really is probably, it's the most deep junior A league in Canada. It's the hardest league in Canada to win in. And what did he do? Just what he did everywhere else he won.
And I remember you talk about people saying that yesterday on social media. I remember when Jason got hired back in 2017, there were a number of people saying, you got yourself a good one, and he is going to turn your program around. And a lot of those people that were commenting yesterday were making those comments when Jason got hired in 2017.
Yeah, and I think Jason is so grateful for that, but he, like he said, it's all about building a staff and a team around him. And, you know, you want to give Jason credit for the work he did, and he wants to be humble and say that it's a group effort, but you're the one that brought the group in.
Mm-hmm.
You're the one that's hired your assistant coaches and your support staff. You're the one that went out and recruited these players. And you know, Jason's weird because at some points, you know, he's very laid back and relaxed, but then he gets super humble at times too, and almost too humble, because I really do think that he deserves the praise that he's getting, and he'll try and brush it off as much as he can. But I am so happy to have been a part of this team under Jason, and I'm so happy that he got the recognition for an absolutely unbelievable job that he has done over these 2.5 years.
And he did definitely do his part to make sure everyone got a little bit of a share of the thanks as well. But, you know, like I said earlier in the podcast, I just think the way that he and Sam Waterfield, their personalities meshed with one another, that certainly plays a long factor in the success that the team has had this year. Because when you have to spend as much time at the rink as Jason and Sam have done this year, it's easy to get on one another's nerves. And, oh yeah, they live together too.
They live together too, yeah.
So,
they're roommates.
I mean, their personalities have gelled just perfectly. And I really do think that that's part of the reason why the team has had the success that they've had this year.
100%. We talked about it earlier, and it just adds to the excitement for playoffs now, because I'm so excited to see what they've built. Everything they built was for this moment. They didn't come into this season expecting to set franchise records and win, you know, 17 games in a row and win the Ron Boileau Trophy for the regular season best record. They were building this team to be competitive in playoffs, and now we're here, and they're the favorites.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm so excited to see what they do to help. And, you know, I know that there's been adversity for this team, dealing with injuries, dealing with Clay and his whole situation. And And you always need that adversity, but they're also doing a good job of creating adversity in that room. And that's stuff that's going to stay in that room, as it should, but it's all about creating that adversity to really find that extra gear in the playoffs.
And when you get to this time of year, I think this is one of the last topics that we'll cover, but it's something that popped into my head, and you may have the same answer I do, but there's always a guy that emerges come the postseason that, you know, elevates their game to a level that you may or may not expect, an unsung hero, so to speak. And I'm throwing you on the spot here, but who would that guy be for you?
I feel like it could be Christian McDougal, just the way that he plays and his energy, a lot like Ryan Tattle. Maybe either or both of them I could really see. But I want to lean towards Ethan O'Rourke, and I know he's been such a big part of this Express team, but he does seem to fall under the radar a little bit, which is tough for a guy of his size and experience. But you have a 20-year-old with, you know, 5 years of junior hockey experience, and I really do think he is going to be such an important piece, not only in the room but on the ice for the Express.
My guy is Cooper Connell.
Cooper Connell, that's a good one too.
And I mean, we know he's had a fantastic second season in the BCHL, and, you know, maybe I was a little bit biased, but, you know, the other day when they had practice here, and one of the things that Jason does to create some fun at the end of practice is you line up 5 or 10 pucks on the blue line, and you go in on a breakaway, and if you score, you get to pick up the next puck and keep on going, and if you don't score, you have to bring that puck back to the blue line and, you know, put it on the spot for the next guy to go in and try and score, and you basically split the team in half and
compete against it, yeah.
Exactly, so Cooper Connell was putting everything in the net. He scored on like 3 straight breakaways in that little game that he played. And I just think of the season that he had and, you know, the strength and the poise that he has. And this might be Cooper Connell's breakout party.
Yep, I can definitely see that. And obviously fresh off his commitment to Bentley University, he'll be going there in a couple years. And, you know, he's had a bit of an up and down season, but we knew last year looking at Cooper Connell that there's a hockey player there. He's a big body. He's got skill. And Jason Forche was really high on him last year saying, this guy's going to be a legit player in this league one day. And his one day very well could be now. And he did quietly put up really good numbers this year. And, you know, he spent a lot of time playing with Josh Wildauer and Greg LaPointe, who are two very good wingers to have. And, yeah, I can see Cooper Connell being a huge part of the Express offensive attack in the postseason.
Any final thoughts for you, Jacob?
Let's get started. I'm done talking about playoffs. I want to watch the playoffs. I want to be a part of the playoffs. I'm done talking.
I'm done talking too. Let's go. Game 1, Express Langley, Friday. Let's do this.